Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday, which means it's another Trends Day on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me, as they do each week throughout the 2019 season, are Charlie Coyner, who is the CEO and founder of First Down Playbook and former NFL coach. Charlie, always great to be talking ball with you.
Hey, Keith. Great to be here.
And a man of many words, Zach Dunn, who is an analyst and content coordinator for us at USA Football.
Can't wait, Keith.
All right, guys. So we've seen a lot of things happen throughout the 2019 season. We've tracked on a lot of different trends. And so as we wind this down here, we're probably going to have maybe this one and a wrap-up show. But you know, I want to take a look at a few things that we've seen here late in the season. So as we look at this time of the year, this is definitely a time that you see a lot of constraint plays coming out. You've had a season long of developing tendencies, and now it's the opportunity, especially as you run into some big games, to break some of those tendencies. And we've seen that really at all levels. Looking at just the playoff game I was at last week, you know, a team I've watched all season long, definitely saw them do some things that broke tendencies that they had developed over the course of the year, and now they're breaking them in, you know, week 12 of the playoffs. We pointed out, we saw a pretty neat one in the Patriots game, though it didn't work out probably as well as it looked on the whiteboard, and then the Rams using a constraint play as well. But, you know, in general, Charlie, looking at, you know, what's going on with those things, and I know you draw up a ton of plays, how important is it to look at it, start to break those trends, and have those constraints developed, maybe even working them a little bit earlier in the year, but being able to break them out in a big game?
I think it's extremely important. And, you know, we talk a lot about analytics, and we talk a lot about, you know, who's doing what and percentages of this and percentages of that. And no question, our game is more scientific than it's ever been. But to me, where the word analytics, and we talked about this on another of your podcasts before, sometimes the word analytics can be just a big word for doing a good job of self-scouting yourself and knowing what you do. And so to me, I look at what's happening with some good teams that are still playing or, you know, trying to get in the playoffs or whatever, that somebody is doing a good job of looking at what the other team is seeing. And if you've got somebody that is doing their job there, that's where that all starts, in my opinion. And when you start looking at, we have done this 95% or the golden, you know, the golden charm of 100%. If you get that, and you know that they have cut-ups through whatever system they have, and they watch that play over and over and over again, it just makes sense. It just makes sense to, particularly at the end of the season, to put a wrinkle in here, put a wrinkle in there, and, take advantage of that.
I know, Zach, that you pointed out and looked at a play from the Rams, and, you know, something that they had done all season long with running some jet motion, running some outside zone, and they really developed a nice counterplay that, interestingly enough, the lead blocker, the lead puller on this thing, there wasn't a first guy who usually kicks out, but someone leading through was Cooper Kupp, a receiver.
Yeah, Keith, so, you know, everyone knows that the Rams never play as wide zone weak, and usually it is ran off of that jet motion. So where they'll start in a either balanced set, 2x2, or a 3x1 set, a 3x1 bunch, and they'll run jet motion. Then they'll sit the guy backside, you know, to kick out the backside in, and they'll run wide zone weak. Well, the play they brought up this week was a 2x2 set where they ran the jet motion. Then what they did was they ran a zone linebacker where everything looked the same. So you had the jet motion, then you had a guy coming back around, and instead of kicking out the defensive end, he's coming back to wrap up on the safety. And, you know, the running back's footwork is the same initially. You know, he's stepping like he's going to run wide zone weak, then he's crossing back over, and he's taking the handoff going back the other way, following his lead blocker. So, you know, that was a very good straight play, and it's also something that the Rams needed to do because they can't run wide zone weak as well this year because they lost some of their interior offensive linemen, and, you know, their new center and their new guards cannot reach block as well as what the guys could last year. So, you know, this gave them more double teams at the point of attack, which is kind of what they need to go to, is more a duo, more, you know, zone linebacker, maybe some power. So it was a great job through self-scout and really, really, really drawing this up by Sean McVay.
Yeah, definitely. It did have that duo feel to it with the way they were able to combo that up, and a very well-designed play. Zach will give file of that in our show notes as well. Moving on, looking at another thing that we saw here a little bit later in the season, the big one that sticks out was the end of the LSU-Alabama game a couple weeks ago, where Burrow looked like he was running draw. This is late in the game, and he kind of just pulled up and threw the ball right down the seam there to a guy running. I saw another one. It was, I think, from the same week. It was Virginia Tech running this on what looked like was going to be a quarterback counter. And, you know, back came out of the backfield and just kind of ran up the seam. We had pullers, and quarterback just stopped on his path to the line of scrimmage, pulled up and threw it to that guy who was running wide open down the field. Now, he ended up fumbling it about 40 yards down the field, but really gashed the defense there with it. And, you know, I can remember a couple years ago talking with Rich Alercio, who is at St. Johnsbury Academy in Vermont, state runner-up here 2 years in a row, has also been state champion, talking about his favorite play being the pin and pull RPO. And when you look at it, if you don't look at the blocking first, just look at what's happening. It really looks like just a sprint out pass. And, you know, I think he likes, you know, something basic like a fade with an out, or you could run like even a curl or a smash route there. But basically a two-man combo. What's nice about it, though, is he gets the pin and pull going, right? He has blockers out in front for this quarterback. And if the quarterback doesn't like it, he's just going to continue on the run. And I think that's what we have in some interior runs there. The ability for the quarterback to not really have to worry about a mess point, and a lot of times is able to make that decision a little bit later. Now, obviously, with draw blocking, that's going to sort out so that, you know, you don't want guys releasing right away downfield, so it will mesh well with a down the field RPO. And even the counter, right? If you double that up the right way and, you know, are patient on the combos, you're not coming off right away and your pullers are going to take some time to come through, you're not going to have guys downfield. So I look at that to be something that we see continue to develop in offenses, especially those with a running quarterback.
It's like a lot of things, Keith. You're exactly right from the standpoint of I look at it and, you know, it might be 5-10 years ago. I don't know how many times you would see a quarterback power period, right? Who ever heard of running the quarterback on a power? You know, that was always going to be your tailback, and you will have a fullback on the power. And then it went to a one back power. And now, yeah, we've evolved to a quarterback power and a quarterback power RPO. And that's what good coaches do. They sit and they look at, you know, what we're doing in the off season. Where are the trends going? What can you do? I'll add this, that, you know, another trend that has kind of fallen as a common theme across everything you've said today, and really a lot of what we've said this season, is that coaches are willing to do what they never would have attempted maybe 5-6 years ago. Meaning you know, you can't do that. And you see a lot of coaches that are doing it. Now, there may be some, there may be some danger of what if they do this? What if they blitz here? What if they bring that safety or whatever? But I think coaches are getting more willing to maybe play the odds and not just say, we can't run that play because if they do this, then we're in trouble. The odds are, really, analytics once again, 95% of the time, that's going to be a great play. So that, I think we're seeing a lot of coaches do that.
I think we've mentioned this before here, maybe in the last couple of weeks. It is the time of year where tricks definitely start to come out a little bit more too. And it's, you know, it's big game time. It's playoff time, a chance to do something to get that slight advantage in a game. And, you know, watching a playoff game this past weekend, my son's game, the other team came out of the huddle, which, you know, to me, something was up right away because this team is a no-huddle team. But out of a timeout, huddled, came out of the huddle, line up, shift out of a tight formation into an empty formation, and throw the ball to a guy who's running wide open up the seam and no one's covering him. And I knew what happened right away. I knew they hit a guy, their tight end, at the tackle. They shifted out what was really the tackle on the other side. So it was tackle over. The tight end who was aligned in the tackle spot was not covered, so he was eligible. And I first saw this play. Boise State did it. We copied it ourselves at BW, I think, used it for a touchdown in 2011. But, you know, it's that time of the year, starting to see some of those favorites come out, you know, Philly special, or, you know, hide the little guy, those kind of plays that we see, you know, over and over again. People are going to break them out in new and different ways.
Just trying to get to another week of play. You look at this time of year, just like y'all are doing in high school, and really, you know, whether you're trying to get in the Final Four, or if you're trying to get bowl eligible, or if you're in the playoffs and you just want to get one more week of football, if you were like a Charlie Coyner anyway, knowing that you wasn't going to play much, you haven't much of a chance to play in college, then yeah. That's what it is. It's how can we get to another one more week of football?
And the last thing I've kind of observed here, and not necessarily that it's a trend, but as I've watched games and broken down high school games over the course of the season, you know, a lot of teams using the RPO or bubble screens and quarterbacks getting the ball out quick, throwing free access and being really good about helping their line up front and throwing that ball quickly to you know, let somebody make a play in space. Now, as I've seen the season wear on here, and again, looking at maybe playoff games, looking at late season games, and teams maybe starting to do things a little bit differently. I mentioned I'd seen some drop eight recently, and, you know, now the quarterback who's used to getting that ball out quickly, which you still have the ability to do, I think, with a lot of pressures you might see, is to find that hole in the defense and throw it. But those teams now that start to make that quarterback go deeper into his progression, I've seen a lot of discomfort on the part of young quarterbacks at the high school level as they've had to look at two and especially number three in the progression. And, you know, I haven't seen a ton of checkdowns thrown. You know, a lot of times I do see six-man protection, so they don't have those in there. But, you know, my thought is this, my observation, I guess, is this, is that we're doing a great job with these RPOs and quick game and those kinds of things, but maybe not completely training or training enough the ability to work longer through a progression. And I say that, you know, part of it, if you think about this and, you know, watch practice film from high schools too, is that you don't always get the look you want out of your scout team that takes things away. So that quarterback, a lot of times, is in practice, even on the drop back stuff, able to throw where he wants to. And certainly, you know, when he's wearing that yellow jersey, it becomes a little easier as well. But that's my observation. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, Keith, I think you're exactly right. But I also think that it's just you should expect that. And here's why. There's only so many hours in a day. There's only so many hours of practice and meetings, and you're only going to have time to get good at so many things, right? And so if you're going to spend your practice time on RPOs, which has really apples and oranges when it comes to what a drop back quarterback is going to do and actually go through a progression read, then I think that's to be expected. I think that the good coaches out there, and I flash back as you were talking there to the University of Tennessee spring clinic that I went to this past year, and Jim Chaney was speaking, and Jim said, you know, he said, we have plays that we run, and there's other plays that people talk about. We look at people run them, and they run them really well. He said, we run them. He said, and they suck. He said, so we don't run that play anymore. And so, you got a good laugh and everything, but it's really true. You got to look at what you are built for and what you're going to put the practice time in for, and odds are, unless you're at an elite level of football, you're not going to have a quarterback that's just going to be a stellar player as an RPO quarterback and as a dropback quarterback.
Yeah, Charlie, I think you're right there. And, you know, I can think back to years of coaching high school football. I mean, we were a quick game play action team. We didn't like to have to get into that drop back pass. And we kept a very small menu for those things because we felt like, you know, our practice time is devoted to some of these other things that, you know we might get in those third and long situations. And so here's the plan. And we would work it over and over. And in fact, you know, our because we were a quick game and play action team, you know, when we would go to 7-on-7 in the summer, the majority of what we would do would be to work our third and long package, right? I mean, it was a time for us to get those things in. To me, you always got to be efficient with reps. So that's where we would introduce it. And, you know, we had some success with that. But, you know, I think maybe a couple of things that happen here is we overload these kids with stuff we think they can do. And I think even bigger is lacking that common language. I see a lot of times when I look at playbooks that there's not a consistency or a system for the quarterback to really go through his progression, or for a coach to communicate and help him navigate through what they want him to see, what they're seeing. You know, hard to get on the same page as your kid. Now, I'm friends with and have studied two systems that do it very well. And I think both of them are kind of rooted in some of the things that Homer Smith did in calibrating the timing of drop back routes. But I think Dub Maddox does an incredible job with his R4 system, and Dan Gonzalez does an incredible job with what he calls ACTS, A-C-T-S, which stands for advantage, concept, third fix, and scramble. For Dub, it's rhythm, read, rush, release. And I think, you know, there's some consistency there. And having used that, really both of those systems, kind of I combine them a little bit, I know for our quarterbacks, things started to be a lot more clear. So I think, you know, if you're looking at what you can do, and maybe if you're struggling in those areas, look at how you can, I guess, standardize some of that or create a language that you can use to communicate with your quarterbacks, or adopt, you know, one of those systems. I think there's some great things in there.
Critical. And you know, you hit it on the head. You sit there and one read is here, and you got a similar play, and now the read's here. We, you know, we've seen it. I coached 30 years, and I always would look at coaches to be careful about sitting at a table with clicker. And on the fifth time you run it back, having crystal clear vision of what should have happened on that play. You know, when you're watching from the press box view, sitting in a chair in a coach's meeting, these players are playing with helmets on, and it's happening in real time. And I used to always get a kick out of coaches that wanted checks to be made with guys in three-point stances that just got knocked upside the head about five or six plays before, and or got sweat running down their forehead. So, yeah, everything that you can do as a coach to put yourself in the position of the player. And those systems are good, Keith, in my opinion, just because of that word. It's a system, and you're not grab-bagging over here and over there. Okay? Because if you're not careful, you're going to have a lot of great football plays, but you're going to have no system and no cohesiveness, and that's never a good combination.
Well, Charlie, speaking of having a lot of great football plays, I know you've done an excellent job with First Down Playbook. And, you know, now is the time, I think, a lot of people have put away the equipment and they're breaking down, looking at what they need to do for next year and want to start building some things up. I think you have an incredible resource that is a time saver as well in First Down Playbook, and as well as now having that editing tool built in. How can our listeners take a look at what you have going over there?
Yeah, Keith, they can go to firstdownplaybook.com to spell it out, F-I-R-S-T-D-O-W-N, playbook.com. Or if they want to just look on a daily basis, we do something on a website we call the Coaches Community Site, and that's at blog.firstdownplaybook.com. And yeah, it's that time of year that the coaches that got the most out of First Down Playbook this year, really our initial year taking it out to the high school programs, were the ones that got involved with it early, took all of those 35,000 plays, moved them over into their playbook area, and edited them, and once again, got their system going.
Yeah, and I think that word is critical. As you look forward to 2020 and what you're going to do, you know, make sure that what you have isn't just a collection or a grab bag of plays. Have a system, fit things together. And, you know, that's something we've done in looking at contact, blocking, defeating blocks, as well as tackling, and have developed some systems at USA Football. And our systems are available at footballdevelopment.com. So go over there, check those out. We have our free shoulder tackle system, also known as the Hawk Tackle system, with 27 drills along with all the teach materials, our advanced tackling system, and our contact system for blocking and defeating blocks. And the best part about that, you know, you're probably saying, well, why do I need that right now? Well, it is designed to be able to start to implement some of these drills and teach these skills within the off-season program. This stuff does not have to wait till August when you break out the equipment. In fact, most of it is or I should say all of it, is really done with, you know, shorts and T-shirts. There's a few things where we have some drills that are shown or techniques that are shown with shoulder pads on. But for the majority of it, that is not necessary. You can block some different surfaces or get hand placement on, work footwork, work postures, all those kinds of things. Again, check it out at footballdevelopment.com. And then we will be kicking off our off-season content here soon, especially over on at FBDEV coach on Twitter. Zach's going to have our your call there, our learn from, quote of the day, all kinds of content will be appearing over there. So check those things out. Guys, it was great here. As I said, we're going to do one more of these. We'll wrap things up, but it's been an incredible season. So we'll see what we see here maybe in the last couple weeks and check in.
Thanks, Keith. I've absolutely enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.